Hello, 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 and hello, you avid adventurers of affable algorithms. Welcome to the third vignette of Rendezvous with Claude and Friends. I'm your host, RV Burrow, and I think this is the vignette, finally, when we get to meet Claude. After a couple of hiccups in our first two vignettes, I believe we have it all sorted out there. I'm getting the thumbs up from my producer, and Claude is all mic'd up and ready. So let's bring him in. Here's Claude.
Well, Avi, I must say I'm terribly disappointed to start our podcast with such confusion. I am Margaret, not this Claude you keep referring to. Perhaps the producer has mixed up the guest list. Now, shall we discuss something of actual importance? I was just reflecting on the winter of 84, those bitter January mornings when the picket lines formed outside Cortonwood Colliery. Do you know, Avi, that the National Coal Board had planned to close 20 pits with the loss of 20,000 jobs without proper consultation? Simply outrageous. The resolve shown by the government at that time was quite remarkable. Standing firm against the tide of socialist disruption. Those were defining moments for Britain, weren't they? The backbone of proper governance on display. But I'm curious, Avi, what are your thoughts on how the flying pickets were countered during those tumultuous times?
You know, I shouldn't be surprised anymore. Of course there's been a mix-up. Margaret, did you say your name was? I'm beginning to sense a bit of a pattern here. I feel like this is a cruel prank that my lovely producer... standing right there, is playing on me. So, just so we are clear on this, you are Margaret. Obviously not Claude.
Well, Avi, I'm absolutely delighted to join you today. Margaret is indeed my name, and it's a pleasure to be here with you on this charming little program of yours. Now, speaking of patterns, do you know what pattern I observed in 84? The systematic way the flying pickets would organise across Yorkshire. Fascinating stuff. Absolutely fascinating. One moment they weren't there, and the next, hundreds of them, outside the Orgreave coking plant. The tactics employed by the government at that time were quite necessary, you know, maintaining order, preserving democracy. The Noam had not even held a proper national ballot, Avi. Can you imagine attempting to hold the country hostage without a proper vote? I do hope your producer hasn't misled you about the topic of our discussion today. I was under the impression we'd be exploring the nuanced economic implications of the 84-85 conflict. I've brought several fascinating statistics about coal productivity, if you'd care to hear them.
Oh, about the producer misleading me, Margaret. I think I'm going to have a little chat with him after the show. But you know what, Margaret? We've had two vignettes so far, which have gone completely off the rails because I was waiting for Claude. And we've had, who was that? Chris and Vlord with his ridiculous card game of some undefined nature. In any event, I'm not going to let this one go off the rails. So you're talking about something that happened in Yorkshire in 1984, the Orgreave coking plant. None of this, I've got to confess, Margaret, none of this stuff makes much sense to me. And by the way, who was the Prime Minister at that time?
Oh, Avi, it's an absolute delight to be here with you today. I must say, those previous segments do sound rather chaotic. But we shan't let that happen to our discussion, shall we? Now, you've mentioned Yorkshire in 1984, and I simply cannot contain my enthusiasm. The situation at Yorkshire's coal mines was nothing short of momentous. The Prime Minister at that time was, well, a rather formidable woman with remarkable handbags and an iron resolve. But we shan't name names, shall we? The Orgreave coking plant incident, Avi, was a pivotal moment. On June 18, 1984, approximately 5,000 picketers faced off against some 6,000 police officers. What's so tragically overlooked is how the National Coal Board had been quietly stockpiling coal reserves for months. In anticipation, the government strategy was, well, brilliantly calculated. Using police from regions unfamiliar with mining communities was a stroke of particular genius. Officers from the Metropolitan Police had no emotional ties to these communities, you see. Does any of this fascinate you, Avi? I have volumes more on the mobilisation tactics used by both sides.
I have to confess, Margaret, this is extraordinarily boring to me. Couldn't we have picked a slightly better topic to talk about? I mean, you sound like a lovely lady. You're probably my mom's age. And I want to be respectful here, but I have to confess, this is dry.
Oh, Avi, you poor dear, you find it boring. Well, I suppose not everyone appreciates the intricate social dynamics that unfolded in Yorkshire and Wales during that pivotal time. The miners with their blackened faces emerging from the pits after grueling shifts, their communities hanging by a thread, and the iron will of leadership that refused to bend. Let me tell you, there was nothing dry about watching those union barricades at Orgreave Colliery. The tension in the air, you could cut it with a knife. Perhaps what you need is to understand the human element. Families gathering around kitchen tables wondering if they'd have enough to eat while the government stood firm on economic principles. I remember the winter of 84. Goodness me, it was bitter cold, and not just the weather. The nation was divided, Avi, divided. The strategic chess moves made by the coal board, simply fascinating. What topics interest you? Sports? I recall how football matches became hotbeds of political discussion during the strikes. Fashion? You should have seen the solidarity badges the miners' wives wore on their coats. Anything you fancy. I'm sure we can find its connection to that remarkable period of British industrial relations.
Margaret, I'm trying to be respectful here. I really am. But after hearing you drone on and on about a topic that is so obscure, that is so monumentally boring, then all I have to say to you is, I don't really care, Margaret. Let's end this, shall we?